Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 229, and it's proudly brought to you by our ever-growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support. And if you'd like to support the show and aren't already, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. James, a big week for us. This is the third time we've talked this week. We've got you got the busy schedule coming up.
Yeah, it's a busy time of year, so we're going to do a shorter episode for this one. We weren't actually going to do an episode. We were pretty seriously considering just taking the week that this one would, like, or the first, you know, play of March off, but thankfully the watch world provided us a topic with some of our favorite brands launching some pretty cool watches. So we're going to do a shorter one. You know, every now and then we do really big episodes. We call them megasodes. I'm going to call this a shortisode. I spent the morning shoveling, and I shouldn't complain because I think we got about half the snow that you guys did.
Yeah, we've had like this 2-day snow event, and we're pretty well buried in here. I got out this morning before we recorded and had to rake the roof again. I mean, it's getting old, you know. We're almost to March, and I believe we're at least in the top 5 snowiest winters on record here in the Twin Crazy. Cities, which is saying something. So
yeah, for sure.
It's impressive, but it's also a bit tiresome by now.
Yeah, let's get on with the spring and summer. We had a nice taste of spring here for almost 2 weeks. It was, you know, it was above zero. We had a couple really, really nice, I would almost say warm days. And it was lovely, and I was just like, oh, can I get the bike out, put some air in the tires?
Yeah.
No, the answer is no, James, you shouldn't. So fair enough. And then, shortly after we record this, I still have to pack and do a bunch of planning, but very early next morning, I'm on my way to Salt Lake City and then to Park City after that for a photo shoot that I'm there for a day, and then I go to New York. So I was looking at the weather, and it's warmer currently in Park City, which I didn't expect, than it is here in Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
And then, the only other thing I've got to chit-chat before we dig into the news from some of these great brands with the new watches is a big thanks to Matt and Greg from the Spirit of Time podcast. They had me on. The episode should be live by the time this one comes out, so hit the show notes. I'll link to it. But they had me on for their sort of, I guess, the second time that they've done like a preview of the Formula One season.
Oh, wow.
And we ended up talking for a couple hours about all sorts of watches, including some of the stuff we'll talk about on this episode, but also about Formula One and all that kind of stuff. So if that sounds interesting, if for whatever reason you need more of my voice, the Spirit of Time guys were really just so much fun to sit and chat with, a nice way to spend an evening, have a drink, that sort of thing. And we had a good time. So if you're keen on more, or if like me, you're looking forward to Formula One season starting very soon. I'm looking forward to the weekend I get back from this trip. Will be the first race, so check that out and hit it up on the show notes, and a big thank you to Matt and Greg for having me on. It was awesome.
Oh, can't wait to hear that. Those guys are a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're having a good time. You want to jump into some wrist check?
Yeah, sure. Boring. I'm a broken record here. I've still got the Blancpain on. I'm very well considering just tucking everything else away in a safe somewhere and just wearing this all the time at the current rate.
Fire sale.
Things will change, I'm sure, and you know, next time it'll be different, but who knows? For now, it's the same. How about you? What are you taking on your trip?
On the trip, I'm taking the Mito Oceanstar GMT, the LE we made for Hodinkee, obviously changing the time zone, although I'm only there for like a day, so it's not that big a deal. But that's my kind of broken record. That's what I've got on. It's the watch, like between that and the Scirfa, it's what I'm wearing basically all the time.
Yeah.
Just really, really in love with both of those. The one fun note, though, is just after we record this, after talking about it and writing about it, at this point, I could probably publish a coffee table book about the Pelagos 39. my ticket came up, so I'm getting one.
Oh, man.
So I should be able to go pick that up probably in the next 2 hours, and I'm looking forward to it. So I'll probably, like, let's face it, I'll probably be wearing that.
Yeah.
But I'll take the Mito with me, too, as I like to have a travel watch when I travel and that sort of thing. But I'm pumped. You know, I put in my interest in September. And waited in line, and now we've got one, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of an impulse buy, but on the other hand, I think you've vetted this watch adequately. I think it's such a known entity, and I can't imagine you'll be disappointed. I mean, I'm sure you'll just wear the heck out of this thing. Can't wait.
Yeah, definitely on the concept of an impulse buy, it's not. This would be the most I've ever spent on a watch. And a big thanks to the TGN supporter Slack, because that's where I sold a few watches to kind of do we'll call it an upward consolidation to get to this. But yeah, I think it's going to be great. It's definitely going to be on my wrist as much as possible for as long as possible. And I'm looking forward to putting just a solid patina of scratches into that titanium. So it should be good. Obviously, if I have any news beyond that, it'll be in episode 230.
Nice. Cool.
But speaking of new watches, you want to get into the latest stuff? Man, we got through everything in 7.5 minutes. That's got a record for me.
Yeah.
You want to kick it off with some stuff from Citizen?
Yeah, new watches. Fun episode. We've got Seiko, Citizen, and Zin. And let's kick it right off with Citizen, because they had a couple of releases recently that they're kind of throwback pieces. Citizen's has been revisiting their back catalog, and we saw the Orca recently, and then even further ago than that, there was the the Challenge Diver, that little titanium one that you and I both kind of liked and reviewed. They've brought back the so-called Ecozilla, which is the name that collectors and Citizen fans gave this watch back in, when did it first come out? It must have been the mid-2000s, the forum days, the heyday of the forums.
I think so, yeah.
2005-ish, I want to say.
That's definitely my footnote for it would be, probably more like 06, 07 when I first started to really hit the forums.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For all I know, there wasn't earlier model, but I don't think it could have been a lot earlier.
No.
So, yeah.
This is, from all I can tell, this is almost a virtual copy or reissue of an existing watch. And in fact, if you go to their website, you can still find kind of the original Ecozilla for sale side by side with these two new editions. And one of which is a this full olive tone watch, kind of an olive strap and dial, color accents. And then the other one is this really striking blue dial with a yellow minute hand and a yellow strap, which I'm not sure I could pull it off long term or regularly, but it's certainly a striking piece, and it feels very summery to my eye. What's cool about this watch is it's Citizen, is so good at kind of doing this style watch. It's a very avant-garde, very modern looking piece, as opposed to a lot of what Seiko does, which feels a little bit more traditional. Citizen's always leaned hard into some of these really modern pieces. And the Ecozilla is one of those watches. It has a left-hand crown. It has the really kind of funky bezel style, which almost looks like, I know that the name ashtray has been given to some other watches in the past, but it looks like where you'd balance your cigarette on those little indentations.
oh, it does, yeah.
around that big chunky bezel. Kind of a knurled ring that holds it all together, and then that integrated, really long, thick, rippled rubber strap. I mean, this watch is anything but subtle.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and it's $595. So it's this is kind of like if you want like a modern, solar powered, beat up wear anywhere kind of dive watch. This is something you'd be hard pressed to find anything better.
Yeah, I think like within the same zone as what we like about the Aqualand.
Yeah.
Is this a similar price point? Like you said, it's about $600 for the blue yellow one, and about $675 for the full green one. They're 48 millimeters, so like this is relative to watches, of course, but it's a relatively inexpensive way to get in on the big watch experience.
Yeah,
you want that weekend watch? You want to take it? Maybe you're taking it. Man, how much fun would one of these be to take diving? Right.
Oh yeah,
they do time and date, and it's a solar powered system, being an eco drive, and then both are 300 meters water resistant. I just think it's cool that they're still making these. They can't be their like number one watch, but it's awfully cool that they still make it.
Oh yeah,
and I think if you want that big watch experience, in like an Aqualand doesn't really do it for you, or of course you can't easily buy, like they're not retailing the Aqualand in North America currently, whereas these you could pick up from their website, or conceivably go to your favorite department store, see if they have it, maybe even get yourself a sale, right?
Yeah, and speaking of the Aqualand, kind of our beloved full loom dial JP17, they haven't yet released that yet for North American sale, but they did come out with this other one. The name is kind of clumsy, of course, the BN0227-25X, which is a full loom dial version of how do I describe it? Kind of that squarish case titanium piece that came out last year. It was quite popular. One of them had a blue camouflage dial.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. I don't remember the nickname for it at the moment. I'm blanking.
It's a wild watch, and this loom dial version is really cool. I almost I actually like it better than the first couple of releases of this case shape. And from what I recall, this watch wears really well. It's quite thin. It's a 200 meter water resistance. So, you know, not like a super deep diver, but in titanium with this shape case, very square, very comfortable on the wrist. And then, you know, I'm just such a sucker for loom dials. This is a great piece. So, and $595 again. So, you know, Citizen's kind of crushing it with these really, really kind of modern, you know, crazy dive watches that are just fun to wear. Great, great, just in time for summer.
Sorry, it took me a minute to find it on their website with the orange hand.
Yeah.
Oh, this is sweet. All right, hit the show notes for this one. I think this might be my like new recommendation for the big watch experience, because these being square,
yeah,
they wear well on a variety of wrists. They wear smaller than you would expect, despite being 46 millimeters.
Right.
And super titanium for $600.
Yeah.
Man, I like that. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
The straps are really good too, because that looks like an identical strap to the Aqualand.
Yeah.
Which is just like bulky, but somehow very comfortable.
Yeah.
Yep. Always nice to be able to talk about new watches in general that are like in the TGN world, but from Citizen especially, just because they do something nobody else is making, watches like the Ecozilla or the these big square ones.
Yeah, the one I'm waiting for. I had an Ecozilla, kind of one of the first gen ones years ago, and the mistake I made is I bought it after selling an Autozilla. If you remember the Autozilla with the automatic version, similar in style but bigger. And the crown stuck out further, and then it had this locking mechanism where you could remove the bezel to clean it out, and it came with a strap extension in the case, and it was a really serious piece. It wasn't terribly comfortable to wear. The Ecozilla was kind of a light version of it. I'd love to see them bring back the Autozilla, so I'm just throwing that out there. I know Citizen leans hard into EcoDrive these days, but anyway, yeah, just cool watches all around.
Definitely cool. Yeah, for sure. Good job on that, Citizen. Happy to be able to chit-chat about them. And yeah, it might be worth getting in this other loom dial one in for some coverage. That looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
cool stuff. Wild cases. I'm here for it, especially with summer on the horizon.
All right, let's kick over to Seiko. Why don't you introduce this one, because I was looking up some details about this watch, and you covered the release for Hodinkee. These are sharp.
Yeah, so this is essentially a Sumo, which many of us would know in terms of the size. They're 45 millimeter dive watches from Seiko, called Sumo due to the shape of the 12 hour marker, which, you know, looks similar, I guess, to the kind of clothing that a Sumo wrestler wears.
I didn't realize that was the origin of the nickname. That's awesome.
To my understanding, I could be wrong, and I mean, it's all word of mouth with. Yeah. Seiko nicknames, but I do feel like I was on that thread on Watch You Seek, you know, 12 yeah. years ago, or maybe more like 10 at this point, when that was named the Sumo. It has they're really quite handsome watches, but the thing to know here is it's a solar GMT movement. And I just think, you know, it's a 200 meters water resistance. It comes in two different versions. It's the SFK001, which is blue, and the SFK003, which is green. And so being the solar powered, it's also a flyer GMT. So you're getting a lot here in terms of both convenience and functionality. And let's go a step further and say that it's also a dive GMT, not a GMT diver. So it has a 60-minute elapsed time bezel. You use it just like a normal dive watch. And it has a 24-hour scale, which kind of nicely nestles in around the markers. They're applied markers. They have a really nice looking dials, date at 6, and then the ability to jump the local hand, which I think is great. Look, the 45 millimeter sizing is big. Nobody's going to say that it isn't. But if you don't mind a somewhat larger watch, or you get a chance to try it on, they're just packing a lot into $800.
Yeah.
It's $775 for these with a bracelet. And it's, you know, it's in the current generation bracelet, so it's a solid end link. These take a strap pretty nicely. They have drilled lugs. I'll put the story from Hodinkee that I wrote in the show notes, of course, but you can check on the kind of close up, like especially the blue one, I think is just really good looking.
Very good looking. I love both colorways, but the blue is particularly beautiful.
They both have orange accents.
Yeah.
Nice looking dials, because the dial has to have some sort of a texture because it's kind of glassy for the solar.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't quite look like a normal Seiko dial, which I think works to its credit. I like I mentioned, I appreciate the way that they've integrated the 24-hour scale using only odd numbers and nestled right in with the markers.
Yeah.
Which I think is clever. It's a nice use of color. Yeah, they're a little big, but I also think that, like, and I said this in the story, I think that it's interesting that we might then be able to see this movement in other watches.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So put this in an SPB, put this in a Seiko 5. Like, you could get a lot done, assuming the movement fits in a smaller case,
mm-hmm.
with this movement. I think I said the same thing years ago when I reviewed the SUN023, which is a kinetic GMT with local jumping.
Yeah.
Like, that's a 47 millimeter watch and a great experience diving in Hawaii, which is what I did with it. But as a day-to-day watch, I just don't have the wrist for it.
Right.
Not even close.
Yeah.
But take that movement and put it in something a little bit more casual, right? Like, imagine this is a little bit closer, like what we were talking about in our watch pitches. Like, what if you put this movement in a Monin case?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's just a ton of watch.
Oh, yeah.
There's a ton of watch.
Yeah.
So I was pumped for these. I like what it's, I like what we're seeing from GMT currently between what ETA's made available and bringing the price down on local jumping mechanical. And now you have Seiko having the price of something like the Mito, but in, quartz, solar, that sort of thing. And then, of course, we're still seeing just the beginnings of what people are going to do with the Miyota.
Mm-hmm.
GMT movement. And then, of course, if you go even a price level down from that, you have the SSK GMTs, which, $450 for a collar style GMT in an SKX style format. Pretty appealing stuff these days if you're into travel watches, especially those with dive bezels, and that's right up my alley.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just pure coincidence, but here we are kind of coming out of a couple of years of very limited or no travel due to pandemic, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing just this embarrassment of riches nowadays with GMTs. Really, really good to see. So these are super sharp.
Yeah, I think it's a good one from Seiko. Seiko also has their announcement, their session announcement for the spring in a couple weeks.
Oh.
So I think we're going to have another stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
This is such a fun time of year for watches because everything's new.
Yeah.
Sometimes stuff comes out in the fall, like with the Pelagos 39 or whatever, but so much of it is February, March.
Mm-hmm.
And to have, I'm not going to see a ton of stuff at Watches and Wonders that's necessarily directly in our wheelhouse. So much more expensive stuff, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
To have the Citizen, the new stuff from Citizen, the new stuff from Zen, which we'll get here in just a moment, and then more and more great stuff from Seiko. That's just a good time to be into watches. We've been saying it for a couple of years. It's been a couple of good years,
yeah,
for sure.
Sure,
especially from Seiko and Citizen.
Yeah, and let's move over to Germany here. We just kind of, this news just dropped yesterday, the day before, right? Danny covered it, mm-hmm. on Hodinkee, and of course you pinged me right away when these popped up. These are some, yep. sharp intros from Zinn.
Yeah, and this kind of blew up into a threaded chat on the Slack, and that was kind of, I had seen an email that I wasn't sure if it had an embargo. I was in the middle of something. So I didn't open the email, but I saw some new stuff from Zinn. I thought, like, oh, we'll figure out a way to cover that. And then I saw it blow up on the Slack. Like, suddenly there was a bunch of messages in one thread all based on the Zinn launch. And I was like, oh, I'll go back and read the email.
Yeah.
And read the email. And they launched a handful of new watches, but the flagship or the new thing is a new T-series diver. So you'll remember from a few years ago, there was the T1 and the T2. They were a little bit more expensive. They're titanium. They have captive bezels. And for whatever reason, they just didn't quite take off.
Yeah.
You see them around, and I think it was in the last couple of years that they were finally, like, fully, quote-unquote, discontinued. Nobody just says, like, we're not making this anymore. But they weren't on the website. And then, of course, we had the U50, which came out in the last 2 years. And, is man, my timeline, because of the pandemic, it might have been a little bit longer than 2 years. I'm trying to remember when I had it, but... A fantastic dive watch in steel. A U series is steel. The T series is titanium. So this is now a T50. So it's 41 millimeters, 12.3 millimeters thick, 47 millimeters lug to lug, and 20 millimeter lug width. So very similar in size to a U50. And they're offering three versions. One in full titanium. It's grade 5 for you titanium nerds. And it's tegument treated. So it should be pretty good for scratches, even being titanium. They're also making a version that has a gold bronze bezel. So gold bronze, despite the naming order there, is a mostly bronze gold. I think it's 10% gold or 9 carats, something like that. And then they're doing an LE of 300 pieces, which is fully gold bronze, the bezel and the case, and comes on this really good-looking textile strap. All of these are in the show notes. I recommend you check them all out. But the really fast rundown is the standard model. I already told you the size. It's 53 grams for the case, so very light. They're just shy of 4 grams, so 38.40. Currently, WatchBuys is showing the same price for a rubber strap or the titanium bracelet. So don't be a NIMBY. Get the bracelet, obviously. Granted, the watch launched yesterday, so it could just be a translation error. Who knows? The other thing that's cool here is there's no use of red. It's a very monochromatic application of color, and you get sword hands. So where the U-Series has U-Series hands, these hands are very similar to what you'd see on the UX, if you know your Zins are really well. I think these are exciting, but I also feel like there's a big jump in price for titanium over the already arguably perfect U50.
I didn't get any time with a U50, but what I remember from my days with a U1 was that it struck me as a very heavy watch. I'm guessing the U50 didn't quite have that heft to it, but I think having a titanium version of one of these watches would just make it such a sweet spot in terms of comfort.
I definitely agree. I guess what's surprising is like this feels like they made a watch that lies right between a Pelagos 39 and a Pelagos, right? It's 41 millimeters. It's 500 meters water resistance. It has that captive bezel system, so it's a little techy.
Yeah.
Really, really good looking watch, mm-hmm. I would also say. Mm-hmm. Zins are genuinely usually quite aesthetically pleasing watches, and there's something very stop sign-esque of the U-Series. And this is a little bit warmer with the sword hands, a little bit more like traditional dive watch in some ways.
Yeah.
But it has, you know, it doesn't use a bezel insert. It's a formed metal bezel, like an engraved metal bezel. I think these are good. I guess I was just a little bit surprised by the price point.
Yeah, they are.
Which is more than $1,000 over a U50. And like, I guess that puts it, what, within $800 of a Pelagos 39?
Yeah. I've often felt that Zins are, if anything, underpriced for what you get.
I don't disagree. Yeah.
They seem so over-engineered. And, you know, if you run down kind of the spec list, I think that captive bezel, the kind of push to turn bezel, is really a neat thing anyway. And then
yeah,
they always, well, not always, but with this one particularly, not only do you get the 500 meter water resistance in a high grade titanium case, but they have that moisture absorbing capsule that Zins used for so long. Neat little feature, you know, overbuilt, certainly. You do get a lot with Zin, and I'm not sure if this is a price correction or if, you know, or if they're trying to make a move up market or what, but I guess aesthetically with this watch, I have to say I miss a splash of color. I miss a little bit of red. How do you feel about that?
I don't think I miss it. In my mind, there's something about the standard titanium, the T50 base, not with the gold bronze bezel or the full gold bronze, mm-hmm. but the base one, there's something very 2254 about it.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't have a wave dial, right? It's a little bit more chill than that, but the sword hands, the clarity, the sizing is very close to, mm-hmm. to that of a 2254. I think these are going to be successful.
Yeah.
Look, everybody's going up market a bit these days. So like if Seiko can move prospects from what we used to talk about in the 777 to something like the SPB or even better, then I don't see why Zin can't make the push and charge for the hardened grade 5 titanium. I don't think they're out of line.
Yeah.
I expect that there is going to be some price sensitivity for a brand that's a little bit difficult to see in person.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Right? Because my guess is if you saw this watch in person, you'd go like, oh, this bezel is really good. And the AR, you know, the AR on the crystal is going to be next level.
Yeah.
Just because that's how they operate. And the fitment of the bracelet's going to be great. It'll be comfortable and lightweight. But they can be tough to see in person depending on where you live. And if you live in the States, I don't know that you can unless Watch Buys brings back their road shows, which I'm sure they would like to do, but pandemic and everything else, right? Mm-hmm. So I think they might have an uphill battle translating that price to Zin buyers, but I don't think the price is necessarily insane.
Yeah.
You're talking to a very biased fellow at the moment who's hours away from getting his Pelagos 39. For right. me, I think these are exciting, but the 2 millimeters is a big part of what I've got in the Pelagos 39, was going to 39 millimeters.
Yeah.
It's a little bit thinner as well. You always decide what you're paying for. I'm not necessarily a big in-house guy. But obviously, if you go Tudor, you're getting into the manufacturer movements, which is not a purely in-house movement. It's a shared sort of platform that they share with other brands in some ways. But I don't know. It's a plus or minus. I like the Tudor, and obviously that's the one I've committed to, and I like. I am very excited to see them continue to make reasonably sized, tech-forward, modern dive watches, and I think this one nails that really well.
Yeah. Good stuff. I mean, they had a couple of other kind of limited release. They had a U50 with that kind of distressed decorative dial, which I think is sharp. But I think the real mm-hmm. the real talking point here, the real big release, were these titanium 50s, the T50s.
Yeah. What did you think of the full gold bronze one?
Not my thing. I'm
I think it's a very handsome looking watch.
It is handsome.
Not mine either. It's too brown.
Yeah.
But the photos of it are great. It has this textured dial.
The strap looks really nice on that. That textile strap.
I made that note in our, like, I wonder if they'll sell me that strap separately. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
The strap looks great. But if you like a bronze or a brown tone watch, looks great.
Yeah.
Like really, really good.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see them in person, and I'll get a chance in Geneva. Zinn is going to be at the Time to Watches sort of side thing. It's like not part of Watches and Wonders, but it goes on at the same time in a different part of Geneva. And that's how I got to see the stuff from last year. So I was emailing with them, and I have an appointment to see their stuff. So I should get a chance to see these in person and take some pictures, that sort of thing. So if you're waiting for more coverage, you're going to have to wait like a little bit more than a month if you want more notes from me. But I'll do my best to see and shoot, and definitely put out a hands-on for the like a quick hands-on for the T50.
Very cool. Yeah.
Good name too, T50.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Gordon Murray's new car and all that kind of stuff. I like it. Cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Boy, we're cooking through this one. You want to get into some final notes?
Yeah, let's do it. I like the efficiency of this episode. this is actually a one that I had meant to talk about for quite a while, and I can't remember who sent this over. I want to say it was probably Cole Pennington, because it feels like a very Cole Pennington kind of link. But this was a YouTube video that I watched a few times. It's called "This Secret Dealer Sells White Toyotas That Save the World." And it's from Top Gear. So, you know, this is no great secret on the internet. It's about a visit to a garage in Gibraltar, kind of a stockholding company that takes kind of, you know, bog standard white Toyota, you know, J series, J70 Land Cruisers and pickup trucks, you know, all white, very bare bones. And then they outfit them and paint them and customize them for various NGOs and companies around the world that just kind of this style of Toyota to use for, you know, humanitarian work or, you know, war reporting or, you know, whatever it might be. I think what was so appealing about watching this was, for one thing, I love this vintage and style of Toyota Land Cruiser.
So cool.
But to see a garage full of brand new ones, and then to watch this video where they're disassembling them and taking them apart and adding winches and, you know, rooftop racks and roll cages and making them into ambulances and all of this kind of thing. It you know, for someone who's used to like bloodying my knuckles, you know, trying to free up a rusted fastener on my old Land Rover, I'm so jealous to see these guys getting to tinker on like a brand new, beautiful white Toyota Land Cruiser. It's just enviable. It's just delicious to watch. And I have a feeling a lot of people have already seen this, but if not, it's a treat. You're going to love it.
Man, I haven't seen this. This looks great. It makes me wonder, could we register some sort of an NGO for TGN and buy one or two? Import them under some sort of humanitarian effort for podcasting or something?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, let's do it.
That's so cool. Yeah, as soon as I clicked the link on this, it went directly into my pocket. So I'll probably be watching this, you know, sitting in the lounge tomorrow, and I got a connection in Denver. So I'll definitely do this. It's only 6.5 minutes long, too. This feels like every now and then Top Gear does put out something that it's like 6 or 7 minutes long. And I go like, oh, I really wish this was 40 minutes long. Like,
right.
You know, take the special Toyota on a trip or something.
All right, what do you have?
So for my final note this week is actually something I didn't know existed until last night. I was on, like I mentioned previously, the Spirit of Time podcast, and we were talking about Drive to Survive and kind of the effect that show has had. It's a documentary series, if you don't know, that covers the previous season of Formula One, but presents it as sort of a high-end docudrama. So there's sort of reality show elements and documentary elements about the previous season. So the next season comes out in just a few days at this point. And on top of that, I was saying, you know, this is kind of it's a nice way to get into a sport that you don't necessarily understand, to be presented the human side of it and be explained by some professional who's told like, no, you need to dumb it down. Explain it to someone who's never watched Formula One before. And I knew quite a bit about Formula One before Drive to Survive and loved it. And, you know, almost with complete and normal James Stacey levels of ignorance, I was like, you know, I've experienced tennis firsthand, and I kind of wish that they did like a tennis Drive to Survive. And these guys, I think they thought I was kidding at first, because it turns out the producers of Drive to Survive do a tennis show on Netflix that premiered recently. It's called Breakpoint. And my wife and I watched the first two episodes last night. I love it. The production quality is absolutely five star, and it follows these personalities of like the next generation of tennis behind all the names you know, the people who have won everything for the last 20 years. And it's all these new folks, and it talks about their struggles at various Grand Slams while it explains the sport. I'm loving it. Nice. Really watchable.
Yeah.
So that's called Breakpoint. It's on Netflix. It's from the same people who did Drive to Survive. And I don't even know if you have to like tennis. I mean, that would help.
Yeah.
But like I'm the most casual fan of tennis, in that I've been to a couple matches because of watches. But like I don't sit and watch tennis when it's on.
Sure.
So if you're in that zone where you can appreciate the athleticism and that sort of thing, the show will do the rest of the work for you.
Nice. That's a great one. I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah.
And not to be confused with Point Break, which is the Keanu Reeves, Patrick Swayze.
Which is a fantastic movie, which was then remade into a less fantastic movie. But the Keanu Reeves one is legit.
I just watched it recently. I think I'm not going to say more about it because I think it might make it onto a film club in the future. So... anyway,
nice. Not bad. I mean, Keanu Reeves, he's got a big year ahead of him, too. He said, we got another John Wick coming out. Apparently, it's 3 hours long.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
yeah.
I'll watch that twice in one day. Why not? All right.
All right.
Someday, we'll do a whole podcast about it. We could do just a film club just with Keanu Reeves picks. I think
we'll have to start theming them. That's a good idea. Clint Eastwood Keanu Reeves.
Oh, man. Clint Eastwood. Yeah. So many to pick from.
All right. Well, that was a microsode, I guess we call that one. Swift episode with some good stuff in it, I thought.
Yeah, a little over 30 minutes, I think, by the time I edit it down. I hope people don't mind, but you got a really long one last week. And I feel like this is the meat and potatoes of what would have been maybe just a more chatty episode, right?
Right, yeah. Well, as always, thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab a new TGN signed NATO, get into the Slack, or you know, pick up one of the watch cap bundles if they're still available, please visit thegraynado.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Bill Watterson, who said, "There's never enough time to do all the nothing we want to do."